The following podcast is a Divine Therapy production.
Before I even get into what happened, I need to say this about me. I love games. I always have, especially when there's dinner involved, drinks on the table, and people gathered with no agenda other than being present together. So for me, games aren't really about competition, although I am competitive, but it's not about competition as much as they are about connection and about setting the table in a way that invites people to relax, laugh, tease each other a little, and just feel welcome. So that's something I do naturally in my home, where I'm mindful of the flow, the tone, and how people are received, and I pay attention to how the experience feels for everyone in the room. So when I was invited to trivia night, I was genuinely excited. It felt familiar in all the right ways, but it was also different because it wasn't my space and I wasn't hosting. So I couldn't shape the atmosphere the way I normally would. I couldn't guide the experience and I couldn't soften the edges if something felt off. I didn't realize going in how much that lack of agency would matter until the night actually started unfolding. So last night, I went to trivia night expecting exactly what most of us expect from something like that. Food on the table, laughter moving through the group, easy conversation and low stakes fun, the kind of like shared play where nobody is trying to prove anything and nobody is auditioning for authority. Just a room where people show up as equals and let the night unfold without needing to manage each other. A fun night. But what stayed with me had nothing to do with whether we won or lost, because honestly, that part didn't matter at all. What stayed with me was how quickly the idea of good vibes became a cover for dismissiveness and how charm and jokes slid in front of behavior that just didn't sit right. And how easy it was for control to show up in a place that's supposed to feel casual and social. So this episode isn't really about trivia. It's about those everyday moments where disrespect hides in plain sight. Moments where it doesn't arrive loud or obvious, but wrapped in humor, apology, or personality. And moments where you leave thinking something felt off, but you can't quite explain why. So that's what I want to talk about today, not to call anyone out, but to name something many of us recognize once we finally have the language for it. The group itself was mixed in a way that should have worked. Different ages, different identities, different personalities, all sitting at the table with no official hierarchy and no assigned roles, just people showing up to play a game together. So on paper, nobody was in charge, nobody was running anything, and the setting was casual enough that collaboration should have felt natural rather than negotiated. But one of the guys on our team was younger, he was confident, very socially loud, clearly intelligent, and clearly used to taking the lead in group settings. I don't say that to make him the villain of the story, because this isn't about labeling someone as bad. It's about noticing a dynamic. So he moved through the space like someone who expects to steer, like someone who's comfortable deciding the direction and assumes others will fall in line. Now, if you know my personality, you already know we have a clash here, okay? Anyways, what stood out to me was how early the tone started shifting. Small comments framed as jokes landed sideways, definitely sideways with me. And they weren't towards me. They were just towards other people. And I was literally looking at him sideways like, what is going on? So we had that. We had remarks about the team's chances, about who was capable, about what kind of questions we were dealing with, and subtly positioned the group as already behind. So it was nothing overt. It was nothing dramatic. And I don't know. I feel like even me saying that it wasn't dramatic, I think I'm downplaying it a bit because it was definitely dramatic. But it was also just enough to set the narrative before we even started playing. And once that tone was set, everything that started to follow behind that, it was just a lot. So as the night unfolded, it became clear that this wasn't a one-off moment. You know how someone may say something and you kind of look at them sideways, but you realize like, oh, okay, well, no, maybe it was just me. That wasn't the case. It was a pattern. The way he spoke to the host really stood out to me because these people were running the game, providing the food and drinks, holding the whole evening together, and yet the tone toward them carried an edge of dismissal, like their role was incidental rather than essential. And I don't like that because when you are disrespectful, and I'm just going to flat call it out, when you're disrespectful to someone who is putting everything together and there's no gratitude, there's no humility, that is a big problem with me. So within the group, comments kept slipping under the cover of humor. They weren't loud and super rude, but in my eyes, they were. But maybe to someone beside me, it was not. So for example, I had a friend there, her name, I'm just going to say Kay. To Kay, I noticed that she was not offended right away. I was with some of the things that he was saying, and he was not directing this towards us. It was just calling out other people in the room because it was about 20 of us. So when the pattern kept repeating, that is when Kay became affected. So maybe it took her a little bit longer. Maybe she wasn't paying attention at first. We didn't talk about that part, but I instantly picked up on it. But it might be just because it's just my personality. In the end, everybody in the room was uncomfortable. I will just say that. So he kept trying to make jokes. And they were easy to excuse, but they were hard to interrupt without feeling like you were overreacting. You know, it's like that thin line where someone can ride the line. And if other people in the room aren't picking up on it, and then you react, then you look crazy. When you really actually have a reason to react, it's because somebody's playing games, but other people aren't catching on to it. So I couldn't say anything yet. And I actually, when I did say something, it was just one line and it wasn't even dramatic. It was just one line just to let him know, like, hey, this is a bit much. So let's move it along. When it came time to answer questions, collaboration never really had a chance to form because suggestions that we had for what the answers were, that it was shut down quickly, especially if it didn't come from him, even when the answer was obvious. For example, one of the questions was, how many points are in a touchdown? Okay. I know somebody might be listening to this right now and you're going to say the answer, it's 6. But they were actually debating. And so I'm sitting here and I'm saying it's 6. I'm trying to be calm and I'm like, hey, put 6 down. You know, put it down on the paper. And he's like, no, I played football. Like, I think that I would know. And I was like, well, clearly you must have sat the bench. And I had to like pop my shit a little bit. I had to be like, hey, you know, my son played select football his entire life. I have relatives that one is in the NFL. Two of them got scholarships to D1s. My brothers, cousins, very phenomenal athletes. I think I know how many points are in a touchdown. Put 6 down now. Like, that's where it got with me. That was my line. And then another question was, how many holes is it in golf? I said 18. He was like, it is 27. And I said, it is 18. I'm telling you right now, you need to put 18 down. And he was like, I think that I would know. And I was like, I don't think you do, but I would know. So I'm thinking, do I have to like pop my stuff again? Like, what is this? He was like, no, I'm not putting that down. I'm putting down 27. That was before the football question. Because the football question and my response, it definitely ended whatever was going on. There was another question and I forget what it was, but he did not listen to the group. And I don't know. It was just really frustrating. So discussion, it wasn't even invited. And uncertainty wasn't shared because the priority wasn't getting it right together. It was maintaining authorship over the decision. So what made the whole thing slippery was the way each moment was smoothed over immediately after it happened. It was like a cutting remark would land, like, no, I'm not going to do this. Then it would be softened with like a laugh or an apology or charm that would just move, and he would try to reset the energy with it. So let me give you a clear example. He would say, no, I'm not doing this. Like, y'all don't even know what y'all are talking about. I'm putting this down because I know that I'm right. And then when the answers would come afterwards, he'd be like, ladies, I am so sorry. I am so sorry that I was wrong. Please forgive me. I feel like I'm not like even being good. And he was waiting for someone to say, oh no, you're fine. But like, you know, Kay and I, we just looked at him like, okay. And his friend that he came with, she was like, no, it's fine. Like, you can't get everything right. And I'm like, okay, well, he controls you, you know, because I'm an empath also. So I'm picking up on a lot of things, but it's fine. It's game night. It's okay. We're friends. Well, I had just met him that night and his friend, but you know, I'm there with my friend. We're hanging out. It's like a group of everyone. I have other friends there, but they're just on other teams. Let me just move past this because this is not even worth it, right? So there was a moment that cut through it all, and it didn't happen through words. At one point, he was eating, okay? So this was even before, I think this was also before the football thing. Because again, I said that one line where I was like, put it down now. put the number six down, the answer. But anyways, at one point he was eating. So I started writing our answers down because we had to keep up with, you know, the game. And I didn't do it like not as a statement, and I didn't do it as like a power move. It was just filling the gap so that one, he could eat and that the game could keep moving. So without saying anything, and I could tell, I was watching him, he was trying to stuff the food down his mouth because he couldn't take the fact that I was writing down and I was actually allowing everyone to give their answers. And then we were having discussion about what would be the best answer. So now he did not really like that. And without saying anything, he reached over because I had put the pen down. He took the pen and the paper back. And then it was just like real quick. It was like a reflex. He started writing. Food wasn't even fully swallowed. Like, he needed that control. And that moment had nothing to do with trivia. It was about whether the answer, well, and it wasn't about whether the answer was right or wrong or who had the better recall. It was about authorship. About who gets to decide, who gets to mark the page like we're in fifth grade, and whose hand is allowed to be in motion. So physical gestures don't need explanation. They bypass language and go straight to the meaning. This happens where words can be softened and joked away or reframed, and then the body, it tells you the truth immediately behind the words, behind the little cuts, behind the jokes, the softness, and then the reframing and changing the energy. Your body, there's no one that cannot tell me this. Your body is speaking to you, and moments like that are what linger, not because they're, you know, just this big production of like dramatics, but because they make you pause and look inward instead of outward. You start reviewing your own behavior, wondering if you're misreading something or questioning whether you may have overstepped rather than staying with what actually happened in front of you. That's the part that sticks. This is where the story stops being about one moment, which was the trivia night, and it starts becoming a pattern you can recognize everywhere, because what happens next is often more confusing than what happened in real time. So the moment it passes, right? The night moves on, and later, when you try to make sense of it or name what didn't sit right, that's when something else quietly enters the picture. So after moments like this, the confusion usually doesn't come from the behavior itself. It comes from what happens when you try to speak about it. So let's say that you're talking to a friend, a family member, whoever it may be. And I'm not saying that all of them do this, but once we get into this, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So you are explaining what happened. And you start saying something, it just felt off, dismissive, and it could even have been disrespectful. And instead of being met, your experience gets gently reframed. And it doesn't get reframed harshly. They're not overpowering you or being aggressive, but it's softly enough that it almost feels like they care. So the responses that you may hear, they sound reasonable on the surface, and they sound like, oh, well, they were probably stressed, or they didn't mean it like that, or even I feel bad for them. And suddenly the focus shifts away from what you felt. And it's like, okay, wait, I feel this way, but now we feel bad for them. So without realizing it, your reaction becomes the thing under review, not the behavior that prompted your reaction of how you feel and you explaining all of your feelings. So this isn't someone outright telling you that you're wrong. It's more subtle than that. It's a quiet override that nudges you to question your own read, to second guess what you noticed, and to wonder if you're being sensitive or overly dramatic for even bringing it up. So this is what I call, if anyone has ever experienced this, because I'm sure I'm not the only one. And if I am, then I guess I'm just the only one in the whole world. But that is what I call polite invalidation loop. I also call this distorting your truth and changing the narrative that is, you know, veering into gaslighting. And the moment you have the language for it, I want something to change. I'm hoping that something changes, because you might not know exactly how to respond yet. You might not correct it in the moment, but you stop absorbing it automatically. You start recognizing when your experience is being redirected instead of received, and that awareness alone begins to interrupt this polite invalidation loop. Let me give you a little bit more. I had a situation recently where someone was, you know, I felt that they were disrespectful, and it's not something that I was being sensitive about, because if I went into detail what was said, then I am very positive that everyone would feel the same way. And I didn't react to it. It didn't need a reaction from me, but I was explaining the situation to someone. And when I was explaining just my frustration and just how I'm going to move forward in this particular situation with this person, the person that I was speaking to said, I just can't believe that. Like, I feel so horrible for them. They must have been under so much stress. And I'm like, oh, whoa. right. You can be under stress. I get under stress sometimes, but I don't speak to people like that. I don't do that. And I really don't have people that does that in my life. So I'm not going to accept it from someone that's in my life currently, or a new person, or I'm just not going to accept that. And it turned into my feelings not being validated and me having to feel sorry for this person. And I say having to feel, because that was the direction that particular person that I was speaking with wanted to go in that conversation. They did not want to hear that I was offended. They wanted me to feel bad for that person. So it was a very good conversation. Do you see how I'm like kind of struggling? Because it was a sweet, kind conversation. They were not overpowering me. They even threw the word of God in there and to pray. But I left that interaction thinking, why do I feel bad now for this other person? What about my feelings? What about what I got going on? What is happening? So that is another example of the polite invalidation loop. You can call it distorting your truth. You can call it gaslighting, changing the narrative. But what we call it primarily at Divine Therapy is polite invalidation loop. They are being loving and kind, but they're invalidating your feelings. And it just plays in a loop, because it feels like when you are in the situation, especially when someone is doing that, you're going to keep going in the loop. Because even when you fight to, and I don't mean fight in like screaming or like physical violence, I mean like you're fighting for your voice to be heard, you're still going in that loop, because they'll just be even kinder. And you're looping around, and you left that conversation being like, okay, what in the world is going on? And if you're not careful, and if you don't know the language for it, and at least be able to stop absorbing it automatically, then it can make you really feel like you're not worthy, like you're not enough. And you can have a lot of blocked energy just in your chakras alone. And you're holding on to that energy because you feel like, well, my voice doesn't even matter. And then you hold on to the anger, you hold on to the pain, you hold on to the feelings of unworthy and not enough and not having your feelings valid. And it could turn into a physical illness because you are holding on to this. And the only way that you can, quote unquote, ground it out is just within yourself, but you're looping it within yourself. So you're not actually dealing with it, and you don't have an outlet for it. So the first thing is when you notice it, and then you stop that conversation, because you don't need to keep fighting for your voice to be heard. I mean, if you want to try to say again and correct it and say, no, this is how I feel. If you get looped around again, let the conversation stop. There's no reason to keep taking yourself on this roller coaster over and over and over again. So the real lesson here is that none of this was actually, again, about trivia. It was about who gets to decide, who gets listened to, and who gets overridden once a direction has been claimed. The game was just the container. What played out inside was about authority, authorship, and whose voice carried weight without needing permission. And in Divine Therapy's role ledger, which I will be rolling out during bloom season, so it'll be end of February, early March, true authority is held by the number 8. So the 8 is not about dominance, volume, or control. The 8 holds authority labor, which means being answerable for outcomes, absorbing consequence when things fail, and remaining present after decisions land. So authority is not just directing the movement, it is stewarding impact. And so what happened that night in the game with trivia, it wasn't about authority. That was role seizure. So role seizure happens whenever you claim that you are a role, because that's basically what this is, a role ledger. You claim that you are a leader, but you're actually not. You're just seizing the role, and you can tell with you seizing the role may not be a true leadership role. That is what I'll say. So there are moments where someone occupies the posture of authority without being positioned to hold the consequence. That can look like taking charge without shared agreement, because we did not agree for him to take charge. It could be directing others without accountability, correcting or controlling without responsibility for outcomes, or managing people instead of stewarding what the decision actually creates. And in those moments, a person can appear authoritative without actually holding authority labor. They are performing control without absorbing the consequence. And again, we are going to get into all of this, but I want to give you a little bit more language for this, a little bit more depth to what is actually happening. It just so happened that I went to game night and I thought, you know what? This is perfect to talk about. But this is why the behavior feels demeaning, destabilizing, and unsafe to others, even if no one can immediately explain it. The system can sense that power is being exercised without ownership. Confidence often gets mistaken for leadership in these situations, especially in social spaces where people, they want to ease more than truth. But confidence, everybody needs to know this, confidence is not leadership. Intelligence works the same way. Being smart doesn't grant entitlement to control the environment or dismiss the people around you. Knowledge isn't a pass to override collaboration, and knowing things doesn't mean you get to decide for everyone else. So this is also, well, this also isn't an unhealthy eight in the sense of overextension or over responsibility. This is authority without legitimacy. And that distinction matters because when authority is asserted without accountability, what remains is dominance, not leadership, and control, not stewardship. So, like I was explaining with the personality of the person who wanted to take charge, there was no accountability and there was no team in that at all. It was dominance, dominance over the answers, dominance over speaking, just complete dominance. So everything started to fall apart and he was controlling, trying to control everything. And if you are in a leadership position, you should know that when you start doing that and you're not even giving anyone a voice to speak and you're not even, because actually I just remembered one of the questions. It also had something to do with healthcare, and it wasn't my friend, it was Kay's friend, but you know, she's like an acquaintance because she's Kay's friend, but she is actually a nurse. And she was saying what the answer was, O positive. And he said that he was not writing that down. She is a nurse. I don't know what he was thinking, but it was just a lot. But disrespect doesn't have to announce itself to be real. It doesn't need volume or aggression or spectacle. Sometimes it shows up through tone, through assumption, through small actions that consistently place one person above the group. And that is what happened at trivia night. So those moments, they matter even when they're easy to explain away, because they shape how safe people feel to participate at all. And what made this night stay with me is how familiar it actually was, because this dynamic doesn't live in trivia nights. It lives everywhere. You see it in work meetings where one voice dominates under the label of efficiency, where decisions get made quickly, not because they're collective, but because speed gets mistaken for leadership and no one wants to slow the room down. You see it in family gatherings where jokes are used to excuse dismissiveness, where comments get brushed off as personality, history, or humor, and calling it out feels heavier than tolerating it. And over time, the same people learn to stay quiet, not because they have nothing to say, but because they already know how the room was going to respond. So they're not going to say anything at all. Another place you could see this is in friend groups where one person always decides the plan, the pace, the destination, and the mood, while everyone else adapts around them. It looks casual, even easy, until you realize how rarely the group actually checks in with everyone else's preferences. And you see it in social spaces where naming discomfort gets framed as ruining the mood, where harmony is valued more than honesty, and where the person who speaks up becomes the problem instead of the behavior that made speaking up necessary. These aren't dramatic moments, they're patterned moments. And once you start noticing them, it becomes harder to pretend they're harmless. So as you're listening, I want you to sit with a few questions, not to answer them perfectly, just to notice what comes up when you hear them. So the first question is, where in your life have you let someone else decide? Not because you agreed, but because pushing back felt inconvenient or disruptive in the moment. The next question is, when have your feelings been softened by someone else's explanation until they started to feel unreasonable, even though they made sense when you first felt them? Next question. Who actually holds the pen in your spaces at work, at home, in friendships, and what assumptions have you made about why that role belongs to them? And lastly, what actually changes when you stop explaining yourself, when you pause instead of justifying, and when you let your first read exist without asking for permission? Now, you don't need the answers right now, but noticing is enough to just begin. So before I close this out, I want to be clear about something. Naming behavior like this, again, it is not about any drama, and it isn't about creating conflict. It's about self-respect. It's about recognizing what you experience without minimizing it, editing it, or handing it over to someone else to reinterpret. Good vibes should never require you to be erased. Ease should not come at the cost of your voice, your perception, or your presence in the room. If something didn't sit right, there's a reason your body noticed before your mind caught up, and you're allowed to trust that. So if this episode brought something up for you, let that be enough for now. You don't have to confront it perfectly. You don't have to explain it beautifully. You're allowed to trust what you notice the first time and let that awareness guide what comes next. This is the part of the work here at Divine Therapy and All Things Divine, especially as we move through bloom season and until deeper conversations around roles, authority, and self-trust. If this episode resonated with you, I'd love to hear what you noticed. You can leave me a comment wherever you're listening, share this episode with someone who might need the language, or sit with it quietly and let it work on you in its time. You can find more of this work, including writings, offerings, and what's unfolding next at www.divinetherapy.com. You can also find us on YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok at Divine Therapy, where these conversations keep expanding across different spaces and formats. Sharing this episode helps this work reach people who are still trying to understand why certain moments stay with them long after they end, and your voice, your reflections, and your presence in the conversation matter here. So thank you for being here. Thank you for trusting the process. And thank you for taking a seat at my table.